Ecotopia is also made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by J&W Automotive in Chico. With over 19 years of experience in auto repair and scheduled maintenance, they specialize in Subaru and Volvo. J&J, they provide everything from manufacturer-suggested vehicle maintenance to all types of repairs, including transmission and engine repair, brake and suspension, tune-ups, lubes, filters, lights, and more. To book an appointment or more information, visit jandjautomotivechico.com. That's all one word, jandjautomotivechico.com, and at 530-891-3328. We want to remind you that the opinions expressed on Ecotopia do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, volunteers, board of directors, or underwriters. We'll take a short break and be back to talk with Chris Nelson about the proposed Otterson Drive extension.
Oh, can you take care of her? Oh, maybe you can spare her several moments of your consideration leading up to the final destination.
This is Ecotopia on KZFR 90.1 in Chico, and on the phone with us now is Chris Nelson. Chris is host of the Peace and Justice Program, Fridays from 11:30 to 1 p.m. She's a tireless activist for peace, the environment, people without homes, and many other causes for social and environmental justice.
Chris is currently working to educate the public on the new Otterson Drive proposed extension, which she says will use taxpayer money to put in a private driveway for a well-connected developer, destroying the Comanche Creek Greenway.
According to the city website, the Hegan Lane Congestion Relief Project is what its big name is, aims to relieve congestion and improve vehicle, bicycle, and pedestrian circulation in southwest Chico. The study area includes Park Avenue, Midway, Hegan Lane, and Otterson Drive, as well as the trails and intersections that connect to these roadways. We want to learn more about that from Chris. So, Chris, why does this project matter?
Well, it matters because there's a greenway involved that is what's called Comanche Creek, which is in the as early as the 1900 maps was an intermittent creek. There's a lot of old trees along it. It's oak woodland with a lot of different species of trees and animals and birds. And it's a beautiful area. I've lived here for over 40 years. There used to be a beaver pond on it. It's just the last creek before, you know, you leave Chico, and it's absolutely beautiful. And I'd like to just say that it has a long history. It was privately owned, and then the city of Chico bought it after this big fight that we had to try to preserve it. They wanted to do the same project that they're proposing now. This Hagen Lane Congestion Relief Project was formerly the Park Avenue Extension Project, and before that it was the Otterson Drive Extension, and all that would be a road and bridge over the creek that would destroy it as a greenway. And I want to tell the story of all the work that's gone into this since 2001 and our victory in preserving this creek and getting the city on board with making it into a park.
Yes, please tell us that whole story. So, because I've heard, I wasn't here when that happened, but I've heard a lot about that. It was a big victory. So please talk about how that happened.
In 2001, NEFR, Neighbors for Environmental and Fiscal Responsibility, led the way to a victory against the city in terms of their desire to make a private driveway for an industrial park for a well-connected developer with public funds. And, you know, it wasn't fiscally responsible and it wasn't environmentally sound either. But in the years past that, you know, we kind of forgot about it to some extent, but it's exactly the same project. And this is 20 acres of, like you said, really beautiful land of riparian woodland and scrub. And it's, let's see, I want to say a little bit about that, that it's primary open space along the creek, and the rest of it's considered a secondary open space. It's 3,500 feet of creek. And anyway, it's over the years since the city bought the land, there's been a lot of grant funding that's gone into it, and there's been a lot of work by the Southwest Chico neighborhood, the Barber Neighborhood Association, and others. That's first it was called a Creeks and Greenways Action Group, and they did a management plan, and then they got grants for that, and it became a nonprofit, the Friends of Comanche Creek Greenway. They've worked so hard on this. They got grants for over $1 million. They worked closely with the city in order to do community cleanup grants, grants from PG&E to support their environmental management work. They got matching grants from Annie B's fundraising drives. They've just over the years, just so many different community involved projects. They put in a 900-foot hedgerow. They've put in over 120 plants, redbud, Oregon grape, deer grass. Lots and lots of different plants went in there, and they took out a lot of garbage. They took out a lot of invasives, you know, Himalayan blackberry, Johnson grass, star thistle, you name it. Those people worked their tails off on this land every week. They still go out there and pick up garbage. And we sort of feel that this is coming up now for a couple of reasons. One is that when the homelessness crisis was evolving last year, you know, we had the COVID shelter in place, so a lot of homeless people were camped on on greenways, and there were homeless people along Comanche Creek, but then there were homeless people everywhere, and they all got driven out by the police, and they got driven and driven and driven until finally Legal Services of Northern California got a temporary restraining order right before Comanche Creek was going to be emptied out too. So people were able to kind of dig in there and settle down, and now there's a settlement. The judge has done a settlement with the city of Chico, and probably what we expect will happen is that there will be even more homeless people on Comanche Creek than ever before, because the city will try to consolidate them because they have all these sit-lie ordinances on the books, and they have greenway protection ordinances on the books, and those were all stopped with the judge's order, because of these because of the cruel and unusual punishment against the homeless people for just simply existing. So now they will eventually, some of them anyway, will go to this BMX park that is being developed for them. But I don't really know what's going to happen. But under the cover of the homelessness crisis, when there are so many unhoused people at Comanche Creek, they have revived this project. So and they're, you know, they pretty much the comments on their comment page, the city's comment page, have to do with homeless people, rather than looking at the beauty of that greenway and the need to protect it. And we don't have another park for the Barber neighborhood. It is a large area, the largest area in Chico, without a park, if you don't consider the Comanche Creek Greenway. So this is our park, you know, for Southwest Chico. This is an area that has a lot of grant funding that's still in play. All that grant money would have to be returned, you know, and it intrinsically has a right to remain, you know, a habitat. A beautiful rails to trail system has gone in. There's bike paths that go all the way to Midway and Hagen, so that people can keep riding their bikes south to toward Durham. There's, you know, comes all the way out to Estes Road. It goes to Ivy Myers. And these are beautiful bike paths that are, you know, still very much in use by people. There's picnic areas for people working in the Otterson Drive area. Those would all be taken out by this roadway. So we're very much opposed to this. It's called Phase 2. And they're saying as needed. The city couches everything in they're hiding this project behind the term as needed. Their first attempt for traffic mitigation is called Phase 1, and that would be roundabouts and changes in signaling along Park Avenue and Hagen Lane, and some on East Park Avenue. And so there's even problems with that, with huge roundabouts for 18-wheelers. I just don't know how much land that's going to take out. But I don't think that we would oppose that as much as what this other proposal, this secondary part. And the reason why we think they're going to go for it is because they're already working to get funding for it, which is very scary. And the other thing about funding is, my understanding from one of the city consultants is they use general funds to do this study, and those general funds came from campfire funds.
Oh, no.
Really sad, because so many of the people who are camping at Comanche Creek are campfire survivors. Mm-hmm. You know, rather than helping them get housing, they're planning a road, you know, through this beautiful area. So there's a lot of conundrum with it, and we are just trying to organize people and let them know that this is a very real possibility, what the city of Chico and the engineering department of Public Works is planning. And they were really pushing it under the former director, Ottoboni, and I don't know, you know, this Phase 2 part, how much they'll be pushing it in the future, but it's definitely going to be part of the CEQA documents. It's going to, we're going to have to fight it.
Chris, I wonder if we could step back just a little bit and draw a map for our listeners. Excuse me. Okay, Park Ave heads south, and then it turns west to become Park Avenue again, where at that point it turns into the Midway. Hegan Lane branches off at about the intersection of Park and Park. And Otterson Drive then is a right turn off Hegan Lane. Could you tell us, please, how far then would the Otterson Drive extension go? And secondly, my second part of my question is, I thought personally that most of the Comanche Creek Greenway was north of the creek, whereas Otterson Drive is south of the creek. So help me get straight in my head how these would intersect.
Yeah, and I was afraid of that for listeners, too. You have to go to the, if listeners would Google Hegan Lane Congestion Relief Project, you'll see the little map on there. They have an interactive thing. I just absolutely abhor how they're taking comments, but at least you can see the map there. And
I had trouble reading the map, though, and I tried. I spent a half an hour trying to...
I told them that it discriminates against people who lack computer literacy because it's very, very difficult to use. And and they're using this, you know, they're going to compile these responses. And so it's insulting that, you know, they don't take comments in narrative form as all other projects have done before it. I think there's room for, you know, major complaints about that. But, Steve, in answer to your question, the creek, Comanche Creek is crossed by Midway. Midway starts just at that intersection of Park and East Park. East Park becomes Skyway. So if people think about... Ramos and you know that whole area there, right? So anyway, the creek follows the green. I mean, the Greenway is the creek, and then Otterson Drive, Otterson Industrial Park, is the next piece of property past the old railroad berm, and it is south of the creek. But what they want to do is they want to put it go through the parking lot, which is now full of RVs and all kind of chaos right there. They'll go through that parking lot, destroy the parking lot for the Greenway, and then they'll cross through an ancient cottonwood and a bunch of ancient valley oak and some new plantings. Then they'll take out the bike path. They'll make an S-curve, which isn't good for trucks anyway, take out a bunch of young oaks, then they'll take out the picnic area, and then it'll join up on the backside of Otterson Drive. It won't serve anybody besides Otterson Drive. This is almost built out, but not quite at this point. It will not serve Chico in any way.
So I have two more questions. And the diagonal that runs through the map that's on the website, which we're looking at right now, is that a bike path? Steve says
no. The bike path follows the fencing that there's a PG&E substation right next to the Greenway, and the bike path follows that. It's a bit of a ways from the actual creek. It's out in the open area, not in the riparian corridor. Okay. So I would say it's about 100 to 150 feet away from the creek. It does cross at Meyer. Part of it goes to Otterson Drive. It comes up by Estes Road. It's just a beautiful lattice work of bike trails in there. But it doesn't diagonal.
Okay, anywhere. What's that diagonal? Steve, do you know?
That's the road.
That's Otterson Drive.
I thought Otterson Drive made a right triangle. I mean, made a right angle off.
Hegan Lane Industrial Park only has the one main entrance now, and it's off of Hegan. And they want to have another entrance for it. So this is what they've been pushing now. Oh, this is the second time they've pushed for this. And if you hear them saying they need it for emergency use, well, they already put in a road and bridge over at Myers that can accommodate fire trucks and is there for emergency purposes, but it is not for traffic. It is only for emergency purposes, bikes and pedestrians. And I sort of missed your question, but
yeah, no, you got it. You answered
it. Anywhere. Yeah. It's a dead end. It's a cul-de-sac.
Right. Got it.
Tell us a little more, please, about the impact on homelessness and particularly connected to the BMX park and the settlement. Obviously, the settlement isn't going to settle anything. But in theory, a lot of Comanche Creek homeless could move to the BMX park once that has been prepared. Do you anticipate that might happen? Sounded like you were suggesting that Comanche Creek might, in fact, house more homeless that the city, through the settlement, would force people to move into that location. Help us clarify and understand all that, please.
So what you have are human beings with a lot of different life experiences, and a lot of them have lived homeless for a while now, and they may not want to live in this rather controlled atmosphere of this BMX park. It's hard to know, because these little pallet shelters are kind of cool, but the city wants people to double up inside of them. Mm. And so unless people are couples, it's hard to imagine some of these single people wanting to double up in an extremely small space, very small.
Mm-hmm.
It's also probably going to be required that they keep their areas super clean. Among them, many of these folks, are hoarders and have different, like, mental health conditions that make it really difficult for them to keep their areas clean, and a lot of them have anxiety problems with being controlled by others, or a lot of rules or whatever. So I'm not sure how many of the unhoused will accept the BMX park, but it is a lot. I'm glad it's happening. It's just that the city doesn't understand that we need to have multiple solutions.
Right.
We need to be able to accommodate and meet people where they are. And I'm not sure if the settlement is really going to get at that level of nuance, because they've been very unwilling to work with advocates in terms of really, they basically hate the homeless. They came in on that platform.
Yes. Yeah.
Of ignoring their needs, and they're going to stick
with it.
They're only going to do what the judge tells them to do.
Right.
And so Comanche Creek is, all different kinds of people. Like I said, some people keep theirs very clean, very self-contained, but a lot of people don't. But all of this can be cleaned up. There's nothing out there that's permanent. This can all be, that greenway can be brought back to as beautiful as it ever was. Like, when I first lived here over 40 years ago, I used to walk along that creek, and somebody had dumped a whole bunch of asphalt. There was a mountain of asphalt there. And asphalt is so much worse than any homeless encampment in terms of, leaching into the water and, causing harm. So I just have to remind people, that this too shall pass, but I don't know how it'll pass, because the city of Chico, with these particular characters leading the way that have so, they don't work for the general good. They do not seem to care about human beings or, human rights. And so I don't know what will happen. And the settlement terms haven't been told to us yet, so we don't really know.
Right.
But I do hope anyone listening will remember that every single one of these people is a human being, and they're just as good as any of the rest of us. They've had different life experiences and different makeup, but they are us,
Yeah.
And we got to take care of each other, right?
Right. So, Chris, we just have a couple minutes here.
Yeah.
What is the timeline for this project, and what are the next steps that need to be taken to stop it? There's a comment period
about that. They're going to take comments on their pinpoint, or whatever it's called, on the website that they have up for comments until the end of March, and then they're at some point going to take it to the city council, and then it's going to be approved, and then they're going to start the CEQA process. And originally when they were writing about this, they said that when they were talking about this project status update last July, they said that this would conclude in early 2023, but that does not seem to be possible.
No.
So I don't really know, but it is something that right now people should be raising hell about, saying, you know, this greenway needs to be protected. You know, it needs to be kept a greenway, and it is the park for South Chico, and you best not be thinking about putting a road and bridge across it, you know. Because, you know, we are going to have to fundraise. If we're going to need a lawsuit, we're going to need to organize around another referendum if we have to, which is, such a horrible thing to think about.
So much work.
We're so tired of these kinds of things. But it is what it's going to have to be.
So what should people do right this minute, or tomorrow, or the next day?
They can weigh in. If they're computer literate, more power to them, and they should weigh in on the city website where they're taking comments, which is very fragmented and objectionable, but please weigh in anyway if you can figure it out. And then the second thing is letters to the editor and, looking at the Southwest Chico neighborhood plan. That's online, too, and that'll tell you what's been done and what the plan was for this area and all the different grants that went into it, and you know, all the native trees, shrubs, wildflowers, you know, everything that was done and to really make this area a paradise, which it is.
So we're just having to fight like hell to save all kinds of gorgeous spaces right now.
I know.
Encroachment.
It's true. And I think they realize that. I think that on some level they are just giving us the double whammy because, you know, that's a way to win for them. But for us, it just means more work, but also more love, more working with other good people, you know, more chances to use the life that's in us, you know, in a positive way. You know, people should not be discouraged. We're going to win this one. And we're going to stick together on all the other ones, too, you know, whether it's the Tuscan Water District or the
Valley's Edge, which is the one that,
All of it. But anyway, I really appreciate Ecotopia for taking on these difficult topics. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. And our guest has been Chris Nelson. She's a tireless activist. You see her everywhere doing everything, helping people of all sorts. So thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us. And thanks for all that you do, Chris Nelson.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you. Bye.
We want to remind you that coming up at 6 o'clock tonight, it's North State Give and Take with Bobby Tryon. She'll be having a conversation with retired dentist Joe Strickler about periodontal disease. And then at 6:30, Ginger Nichols will be here with Radioactive.
beautiful world. And you're trying to get some sleep. When your thoughts are too expensive to ever want to keep. When there's all kinds of chaos and everyone is walking lame.
This is Ecotopia on KZFR, and our guest on the phone is Mary Muchowski. She's the executive director of Altical Audubon, the host of the Snow Goose Festival of the Pacific Flyway. It's an event that's held at the end of January because of COVID. This year, do you have a radio on, Mary? We might be getting a little echo there.
Do you have a radio on? We're getting a little feedback. Okay, I think we're okay now.
Okay, the event has been trimmed down a little bit this year. The usual free events and activities for children not taking place because of COVID. While there are still many field trips this year, many of them are also full. So we'll be hearing from Mary about the Snow Goose Festival.
So, Mary, how do you account for the continuing enormous popularity of the Snow Goose Festival?
Well, I think that people really like learning about the natural world. They like being able to go out on an outdoor field trip with an expert who can show them and help them identify birds or plants or land formations. They just like to get outside and learn about the natural world. And we have a variety of trips and experts this year, as always. We have some trips that mix history and birding, and trees and birding, and even wine tasting and birding.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Those are very popular.
Yes. So the Pacific Flyway is hugely important to birds. And can you describe it, where it comes, where it goes from, and why it's so important to birds?
Well, the flyway is a general route that birds take. And generally, it's down the Pacific side of the United States, and Alaska and the Pacific side of Canada. And some maps even show it going in inland as far as Idaho and western Montana and Utah. And these birds are going basically from Canada, the tundra, Alaska, and they're coming down to various places to winter, where there is more food than up in the snowy areas. So some birds stop in the United States, and a lot of waterfowl stop in the Central Valley. And some birds continue all the way down to Mexico, Central America, and even South America. We have some raptors that migrate from Oregon and Washington and California all the way down to Argentina.
Oh, my gosh. That's a long trip.
Mary, yeah. I wonder if you could clarify for me. I'm interested to know that a part of the flyway is now artificial water sites. For example, the rice fields in our part of the world, other ponds, some of them artificial, along the flyway. Could you clarify for us how much of the water remaining in the flyway is really natural water versus that which is artificial entrapment by dams, berms, and so forth?
Yeah, I can't really give you any specific numbers on that, but mm-hmm. California has lost 95% of their original wetlands.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So basically these flooded areas that we have now, which are national wildlife refuges, and even the rice fields now flood during the winter to help the birds. They are acting as a replacement for some of that lost wetlands that mm-hmm. we had in California.
And you mentioned that some birds go like thousands of miles. Are there some birds that do like just short migrations that, you know, just go from Northern California to Southern California?
Yeah, we have some of our sandhill cranes come from Northeast California, like up in Modoc County area. Mm. I think some might even come just from upslope, like Quincy area, and come down here. So some of those are just short distances, but they, you know, they still migrate to a little bit better climate.
So is there still the abundance of food, even with these artificial waterways? Are they doing well as they're flying on the Pacific Flyway?
Yes, well, certain birds are.
Okay.
Waterfowl seem to be doing very well. And they are one of the few groups of birds that have not been declining in the last 50 years.
Okay.
And some of the reasons that they're doing well is that we spend a lot of money on conservation for them. Hunters are required to buy duck stamps, which fund conservation. 98 cents of every dollar of a duck stamp goes to conservation. So,
oh my gosh.
That's one way it helps. The National Wildlife Refuges, of course, create habitat, especially the lost wetland habitat, but they do have other habitat. And we also have hunting regulations. So we have seasons and limits, and that helps with the waterfowl. So they're doing very well.
I guess this was on the website or something that you did that had lists and lists of birds that people could potentially see in our region during the Snow Goose Festival. How many birds, how many species of birds are out there in our world?
That's a good question.
I would think
that we still have probably 100 and I mean, we probably have more than this, but on our field trips, they can probably see, some of the trips, they'll see up to 100 species.
Oh, my God.
Those are our big day kind of trips where you get a lot of different habitats. So you get lots of different birds.
And we read that you had seen, you and your fellows had seen about 150 birds on your recently bird count day.
Yeah, that was the Oroville Christmas bird count.
Right.
I think we had 136 species.
Okay.
But that's a good day, and we have people all over the place in a 15-mile diameter circle for that.
Wow.
So we had a lot of people out there looking all day long for birds, so that's how we saw so many.
Mm-hmm.
And so what are the birds that are kind of a little unusual that people might see, and what are the ones where you go, oh, my God, I saw one? I mean, you know, because I know I've talked with you and Scott about this.
The wintering raptors that we have, like when I get to see a ferruginous hawk or a rough-legged hawk, it's a really fun day.
Mm-hmm.
And we have, I believe, raptor run, what we call raptor run field trips, I think every day of our festival. And those are really popular, too, because they go around and look for eagles, falcons, hawks, and even owls.
So red tails, and what's the other hawk that's pretty common around here? Is there another one?
Usually we'll see American kestrels around.
Okay, okay.
And red-tailed hawks. During the summer, we will have some Swainson's hawks, but they leave for the winter. They're actually the ones that go all the way down to Argentina.
And did I read somewhere, maybe I was doing research for the land that's that wants to be Valley's Edge, that I don't want to be Valley's Edge, that Swainson's hawks show up there. And that they're in a little bit of trouble.
I have heard that they do, that they have been seen out in that area. I have not actually seen one out in that area.
Okay.
But I see them more towards the river, the riparian areas.
So AltaCal Audubon is partnering with the Museum of Northern California Art. What's going on at the Art Museum at Moncha?
Well, at Moncha, they help us by holding an art show that spotlights artists who are featured birds in their art. So this year's show is called Wings in Art. And there'll be a variety of media. There'll be photography and paintings and sculpture. And this year we'll have two films that'll be looping during the show, done by Karma Gansler. And the show runs from January 27th through 30th, and then February 3rd through 6th.
And that's open to the public, right?
Yeah, that's open to the public.
Okay.
And they're open Thursdays through Sundays from 11 to 5. And we do have new COVID rules for this show. And
okay.
Moncha is requiring that people be vaccinated. And you also have to pre-register so that they only have 100 people in there at one time. So they're going to have three different hour blocks that you can register for.
Okay.
For, that is mainly for the reception, which will be on January 28th, I believe.
And do you happen to know how we register? Where we go if we want to go to that?
Oh, yeah. You would call Monica.
Okay.
At 530-487-7272.
Okay, so people...
And that's for the art show, the reception that we have on Friday night.
Right. And is that also to register if you want to go another time to look at the birds? I mean, to look at the art?
Oh, I don't think they're requiring it for
that.
Doesn't
look like
I don't think they usually get that many people at a time.
And we might have people in our audience that are wannabe birders or, you know, they're novice birders and maybe they can't go to this exhibit. How would you recommend they get started with, I mean, to the any of the field trips? And you do have a couple of openings. I'm on your website. I think there are still a couple of openings on field trips. Do you know?
Yeah, if there are, there are very few left.
Okay.
You know, they were really getting filled up.
Okay.
I'm seeing just two, Soils, Landforms, and Vegetation of Bidwell and Llano Seco Viewing Platform. And there are a couple of spaces left. Those are the only ones that are available.
Wow.
Right.
Oh, wait, I see
those
one.
Those are good field trips. But AlphaCal also offers field trips every month for free that they can find out on our website or on Facebook. But birding gets you out in nature, and it can be done virtually anywhere. It's an easy hobby to pick up, and there are birds in your backyard. They're around on your walk when you walk around your neighborhood. They're in our public parks. They're basically everywhere, so it's a very easy hobby to pick up on.
I misread the website, so let me tell a listener what is still available. Paddle the North Forebay. The Sacramento NWR Flyoff.
There was one higher up.
But, okay.
Bidwell Park Birdwalk.
Don't be discouraged, listener. There are some spots available.
And so what's the website?
The website is www.snowgoosefestival.org, and that'll get you where you need to go.
Right, and if you can't find a trip there and you still want to go out with us, you can find our other trips at www.altacal.org. And we have our field trips for free that we lead usually 3 or 4 a month.
And what kind of people can come on these? I mean, like, is this, like, rigorous? Are the walks rigorous? Do you have to have a certain level of fitness?
There are all different levels. A lot of times they're just local areas that are all flat walking, and they're pretty easy. We try to have some that are accessible, like the Genetic Resource Center has a paved path that we can go on. But some are more difficult. You just have to read the trip description, and then you can contact the leader.
And usually, you said two to three a month, maybe?
Yes, usually 3 to 4 a month.
3 to 4 a month. And we just started feeding birds in our yard, and we are not birders, but we are in love with the birds in our backyard. And there's so many, the woodpeckers are duking it out with the doves, or duking it out with the black-capped chickadees, and it's just so gratifying. So we're committed to learning at least about our backyard birds.
One of the first things you probably want to do is get a bird field guide.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
there are many out there. One of my favorites is National Geographic puts one out. But there's a Sibley, there's a whole bunch. However, Audubon has one that kind of starts for beginners that's based on colors.
Oh,
so
wow.
So you can look through the birds. If you see a red bird that's mostly red, you can look through the birds and see if you can find it that way. But there's also a new app, not fairly new, called Merlin, and it's a free app. It's from Audubon, and it'll help you identify the birds. First, you put in the size of the bird, I think, and then you go to colors, and then I forget, there's a couple other questions it'll ask you, and then it'll give you a list of birds it thinks it might be in your area. So that's a really good option.
That sounds like a really good option. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what are you most looking forward to in this festival? What are you leading in among these workshops, and what are you most looking forward to in discovering this season?
I am leading a Butte County Big Day, which is kind of an all day from 6:30 in the morning until it gets dark trip, where we try to see as many birds as we can in one day.
Wow.
And those trips are always fun. They're completely exhausting, but mm-hmm. It's really fun to see how many birds we can get in one day. And that one's basically for people who are diehard birders.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have a count of all the birds you've ever seen? I remember Scott Huber talking about all the birds, his count of the birds, number of birds he'd seen.
In his life?
In his career as a birder.
Yeah. I don't exactly know what my life is. It's kind of been kept in two different places. So I'm probably around 600 or 700 birds.
Wow. And what's your favorite bird?
That's my travels, too, to Costa Rica and Mexico.
Nice, nice. What are your favorite birds?
My favorite bird is the spotted owl, but that's mainly because I work with them all the time.
Oh, mm-hmm. So you see them regularly?
I see them every season, yeah.
Oh, nice. And what are your biggest worries about birds?
Well, climate change, it could really affect birds drastically. Audubon put out a report a couple of years ago that said that 389 birds are on the brink of extinction if we let the global warming go up to 3 degrees above pre-industrial levels.
Right. And there also is a huge threat because of habitat loss. I teach kids about endangered species once a year, and the biggest cause of animals becoming threatened or extinct or endangered is habitat loss. And so we have to protect those areas that people are trying to encroach on that's taking over birds' places.
Right, and it's not only just people, but, I mean, yes, definitely people. We have been encroaching on a lot of habitats, and as global warming, climate change happens, we will potentially be doing more. If crops start to have less yield, they will probably be planting more crops to have the same amount of food. And also with climate change and global warming, things that you don't even think about. The sea level rising will cover up beaches, sandy beaches, where we have different birds nesting, like snowy plovers and different terns. So you don't even think about that, but that will be increasing the loss of habitat also.
Right. Well, I'm hoping, I didn't get to let you answer the question, but I'm hoping you have a wonderful time with all of your birds and your bird people. On the 28th, 29th, is that the dates?
27th through the 30th.
27th through the 30th. And thank you so much for coming to talk to us about birds, because I am interested from far away. Mary Muchowski is the executive director of AltaCal Audubon, which is the host of the Snow Goose Festival of the Pacific Flyway. And it's always a wonderful event. I've been to the free things, but someday I'm going to go on a field trip. So thank you, Mary. Thanks for taking the time.
Oh, yes. Thank you for having me on the show.
You say, if you can but prove to me, you are the new day.
You've been listening to Ecotopia on KZFR, and we want to invite listeners to participate in a new series of programs that we'll be hosting in beginning in late January and February. Recently, Chico Enterprise record editor Mike Wolcott wrote a column calling for increased cooperation and understanding among sharply polarized groups, of which we have plenty in Chico and Butte County. Our new series will be called Finding Common Ground, and we're going to invite writers, elected officials, and you, the listener. I'm sorry, we're juggling a lot of stuff here. I'll start again. We're going to invite writers, elected officials, citizens, listeners to come on the air to tell us first what you see as issues in Chico and Butte County where there might be common ground, and second, what kinds of actions could grow from common ground cooperation. So whether you're interested in homelessness, suburban sprawl, potholes, streetlights, COVID, education, waste management, we'd like to hear from you. If you have an idea for a topic, drop us a line at ecotopiakzfr@gmail.com. We'll get back to you promptly. We're thinking that most of these interviews would run about 20 minutes, and we would probably put on two per show. But we'll need active participation from listeners. So tell us about your issue. Give us a hint about where you think we could find common ground, and a little hint about what you see as possible common ground solutions. We'd be eager to hear from you. We'll get back to you right away. This has been Ecotopia on KZFR.
You are the new day. Yesterday, if you can but prove to me, you are the new day. Send the sun in time for dawn. Let the birds all hail the morning. Love of life will urge me say. Knowing we must bear thoughts occur that this night might stay yesterday. Thoughts that we as humans mourn, could slow worlds and end it all, lie around me.
Up next is North State Give and Take, and it's made possible by generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the Cotton Party, offering contemporary women's clothing and accessories with an emphasis on natural fibers in the heart of downtown Chico. Cotton Party has been providing friendly service for over 30 years at 337 Broadway Street. Cotton Party is grateful for your business and offers complimentary gift wrapping with each purchase. And more information you can get by calling 893-4923. And by The Printed Image, providing screen printing and embroidery in Chico since 1980. The Printed Image open Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 3, and by appointment. More information by calling 530-898-9525. Welcome to North State Give and Take. My name is Bobby Tryon, and I do pre-recorded interviews with nonprofits here in the North State and with local